Chapter 45. Tendrils of Mist. Dice tumbling in his head, Matt found Grady with Oliver and Noel on the heights. He carried Rand's bloody banner wrapped up in a small bundle under his arm. Bodies lay scattered around, fallen weapons and pieces of armor, and blood stained the rocks. But the fighting was done here, the place empty of foes. Noel smiled at Rand from horseback. Oliver rode in front of him, clutching the horn. Oliver looked exhausted from Grady's healing. The Ashaman stood beside the horse, but also seemed proud as could be at the same time. Noel, one of the heroes of the horn. It bloody made sense. Jane Farstrider himself. Well, you wouldn't find Matt trading places with him. Noel might enjoy it, but Matt wouldn't dance at another man's command. Not for immortality itself, no, he wouldn't. Grady, Matt said, you did a nice job upriver. That water came just when we needed it. Grady's face was ashen as if he'd seen something he had not wanted to. He nodded.
What? What were...
I'll explain another time, Matt said. Right now I need a bloody gateway.
Where to?
Grady asked. Matt took a deep breath, pulling up. Shale Ghoul. And curse me for a fool. Grady shook his head.
It can't happen, Cawthon.
You're too tired?
I am tired, Grady said. It isn't that. Something's happening at Shale Ghoul. Gateways opened there are deflected. The pattern is warped. If that makes any sense. The valley isn't one location any longer, but many, and a gateway can't pinpoint it.
Grady, Matt said. That made about as much sense to me as playing a harp with no fingers.
Traveling to Shale Ghoul don't work, Cawthon,
Grady said with annoyance.
Pick somewhere else.
How close can you send me? Grady shrugged.
One of the scouting camps, a day's hike out, probably.
A day's hike out. The tugging pulled at Matt.
Matt, Oliver said, I think I need to go with you, don't I? To the Blight? Won't the heroes be needed to fight there?
That was a piece of it. The tugging was insufferable.
Bloody ashes, Rand. Leave me alone, you...
Matt stopped himself, a thought occurring to him. Scout camps.
One of those Seancham patrol camps, you mean?
Yes, Grady said. They've been sending us status reports on the battle up there, now that the gateways are unreliable.
Well, don't just sit there looking stupid, Matt said. Get a gateway open. Come on, Oliver. We have some work to do.
Shai Sum rolled onto the battlefield at Thakandar. So perfect. So pleasurable. His enemies were killing one another, and he had grown vast. His mind was in every tendril of mist that rolled down the side of the valley. The souls of Trollocs were, well, unsatisfying. Still, simple grain could be filling in plentitude, and Shai Sum had consumed quite a number of them. His drones stumbled down the hillside, cloaked in mists. Trollocs with their skin pocked, as if it had boiled. Dead white eyes. He hardly needed them any longer, as their souls had given him fuel to rebuild himself. His madness had retreated. Mostly. Well, not mostly. Enough. He walked at the center of the bank of mist. He was not reborn yet, not completely. He would need to find a place to infest, a place where the barriers between worlds was thin. There he could seep his self into the very stones and embed his awareness into that location. The process would take years, but once it happened, he would become more difficult to kill. Right now, Shai Sum was frail. this mortal form that walked at the center of his mind. He was bound to it. Fain it had been. Padan Fain. Still, he was vast. Those souls had given rise to much mist, and it, in turn, found others to feed upon. Men fought shadow spawn before him. All would give him strength. His drones stumbled onto the battlefield, and immediately both sides took to fighting them. Shysam quivered in joy. They did not see. They did not understand. The drones weren't there to fight. They were there to distract. As the battle proceeded, he trailed his essence down in misty tendrils, then began stabbing it through the bodies of fighting men and Trollocs. He took Murdral, converted them, used them. Soon this entire army would be his. He needed that strength in case his ancient enemy, his dear friend, decided to attack him. Those two friends, those two enemies, were occupied with one another. Excellent. Shysam continued his attack, striking down enemies on both sides and consuming them. Some tried to attack him by running into his mists, his embrace. Of course, that killed them. This was his true self. He had tried to create this mist before, as Fain, but he had not been mature enough. They could not reach him. No living thing could withstand his mist. Once it had been a mindless thing. It had not been him. But it had been trapped with him, inside of a seed carried away. And that death, that wonderful death, had been given fertile ground in the flesh of a man. The three entwined within him. Mist, man, master. That wonderful dagger, his physical form carried it now, had grown something delightful and new and ancient all at once. So the mist was him, but the mist was also not him. Mindless, but it was his body, and it carried his mind. Wonderfully, with those clouds in the sky, he did not have to worry about the sun burning him away. So nice of his old enemy to welcome him so. His physical form laughed at the heart of the creeping mists, while his mind, the mists themselves, gloried in how perfect everything was. This place would become his, but only after he had feasted upon Randall Thor, the strongest soul of them all. What a wonderful celebration! Gaul clung to the rocks outside the Pit of Doom. The winds ripped at him, driving sand and chips of rock against his body, slicing gashes in his skin. He laughed at the vortex of blackness above.
"Do your worst," he shouted upward. "I have lived in the Threefold Land. I had heard the last battle would be grand, not a stroll to my mother's roof picking sim blossoms."
The winds blew harder, as if in retribution, but Gaul flattened himself against the stone, giving the winds no purchase on him. He'd lost his shufa, it had blown free, so he had tied part of his shirt over his lower face. He held one spear. The others were gone, broken or pulled away. He crawled toward the opening to the cavern, which lay exposed, a thin veil of purple barring the way forward. A figure in dark leather appeared in front of the opening. Near this man, the winds stilled. Eyes squinting against the storm, Gaul crawled silently up behind the man and thrust his spear forward. Slayer spun with a curse, turning aside the spear with an arm suddenly as strong as steel.
"Burn you," he shouted at Gaul. "Stay still for once."
Gaul jumped back, and Slayer came for him, but the wolves arrived. Gaul withdrew and faded into the rocks. Slayer was very powerful here, but what he could not see, he could not kill. The wolves harried Slayer until he vanished. There were hundreds of them here in this valley, roving through the winds. Slayer had killed dozens. Gaul whispered a farewell to another who had fallen in this attack. He could not speak to them as Perrin Ibarra did, but they were spear brothers. Gaul crawled slowly, carefully. His clothing and skin matched the color of the rocks. It felt right for them to be that way, so they were. The wolves and he could probably not defeat this slayer, but they could try. Try hard. How long had it been since Perrin Ibarra had left? 2 hours, perhaps? "If the shadow has claimed you, my friend," he thought, "I pray you spat in the sight-blinder's eye before you awoke." Slayer appeared on the rocks again, but Gaul did not crawl forward. The man had sent decoys before, made only of rock. This figure did not move. Gaul looked about, carefully, slowly, as several wolves appeared near the decoy. They sniffed it. It started killing them. Gaul cursed, breaking out of his hiding place. This, apparently, was what Slayer had been wanting. Slayer launched a spear, one of Gaul's own. It hit Gaul in the side. Gaul grunted, falling to his knees. Slayer laughed, then raised his hands. A jet of air blew out from him, flinging wolves away. Gaul could barely hear the whimpers over the rushing wind.
"Here!"
Slayer screamed into the tempest.
"I am a king! Here I am more than the Forsaken. This place is mine, and I will—"
Perhaps the pain of Gaul's wound was addling him. He thought that the winds were starting to die down.
"Here I will—"
The winds stopped. The entire valley grew silent. Slayer stiffened, then turned worried eyes toward the cavern beyond. Nothing there seemed to have changed.
"You are not a king," a soft voice said.
Gaul twisted about. A figure stood on a rocky protrusion behind him, wearing the greens and browns of a Two Rivers woodsman. His deep green cloak rippled faintly from the stilling winds. Perrin stood with his eyes closed, chin raised at a slight angle, as if toward the sun above, though if there was one, it was blocked by clouds.
"This place belongs to the wolves," Perrin said. "Not to you, not to me, not to any man. You cannot be a king here, Slayer. You have no subjects, and you never will."
"Insolent pup," Slayer snarled. "How many times must I kill you?"
Perrin drew in a deep breath.
"I laughed when I found that Fane had killed your family," Slayer yelled. "I laughed! I was supposed to kill him, you know. The Shadow thinks him wild and rogue. But he's not the first one who has managed to do something meaningful to bring you pain."
Perrin said nothing.
"Luke wanted to be part of something important," Slayer shouted. "In that we're the same, though I sought the ability to channel. The Dark One cannot grant that, but he found something different for us, something better. Something that requires a soul to be melded with something else. Like what happened with you, Ibarra. Like you."
"We are nothing alike, Slayer," Perrin said softly.
"But we are. That's why I laughed. And you know, there's a prophecy about Luke? That he'll be important to the last battle. That's why we're here. We'll kill you, then we'll kill Althor, just like we killed that wolf of yours."
Standing on the rocky protrusion, Perrin opened his eyes. Gaul pulled back. Those golden eyes glowed like beacons. The storm started again, and yet that tempest seemed mild compared to the one Gaul saw in Perrin's eyes. Gaul felt a pressure from his friend, like the pressure of the sun at noon after 4 days without having any water to drink. Gaul stared up at Perrin for a few moments, then held a hand against his wound, and ran.
The wind whipped at Matt as he clung to the saddle of a winged beast, hundreds of feet in the air.
"Oh, blood and bloody ashes!" Matt yelled,
one hand on his hat, the other clutching the saddle. He was tied in with some straps. Two little leather straps. Far too thin. Could they not have used more? Maybe 10 or 20? He would have been fine with 100. Morat Toe-Rockin were bloody insane. Every one of them. They did this every day. What was wrong with them? Tied into the saddle in front of Matt, Alvar laughed with glee. Poor lad, Matt thought. He's so frightened he's going mad. The lack of air up here is getting to him.
"There it is, my prince,"
the Morat Toe-Rockin Sulan called to him from her place at the front of the flying beast. She was a pretty thing. Completely insane, too.
"We've reached the valley. Are you sure you want to set down in there?"
"No," Matt shouted.
"Good answer,"
the woman made her beast swoop.
"Blood and bloody—"
Alvar laughed. The Toe-Rockin brought them down over a long valley clogged with a frenzied battle. Matt tried to let his attention settle on the fighting, rather than on the fact that he was in the air flying on a lizard with two bloody lunatics. Heaps of Trolloc bodies told the story as well as any map could have. The Trollocs had burst through defenses at the valley mouth behind Matt. He flew over that, toward the mountain of Shale Ghul ahead, valley walls to his right and left. It was mayhem below. Roving bands of Aiel and Trollocs moved through the valley, striking at each other here and there. Some soldiers, not Aiel, defended the way up to the Pit of Doom, but that was the only organized formation Matt could see. Along the side of the valley, a deep mist had begun to flood down onto its floor. At first, Matt was confused, thinking it had come from the heroes of the horn. But no, the horn was strapped to the saddle, beside Matt's Ashandarai. And this mist was too silvery, if that was the right word. He thought he'd seen that mist before. Then Matt felt something from that mist. A prickling cold sensation followed by what he swore was whispering in his mind. He knew immediately what it was. Oh, light.
"Matt, look,"
Alvar called, pointing.
"Wolves!"
A group of jet-black animals, almost as large as horses, were assaulting the soldiers defending the path up to Shale Ghul. The wolves were making quick work of the men. Light, as if things had not been difficult enough.
"Those aren't wolves," Matt said grimly.
The wild hunt had come to Thakandar. Maybe they and Mashadar would destroy one another? Was that too much to hope for? With the dice tumbling in his head, Matt was not going to bet on it. Rand's forces, what was left of the Aiel, Damane, Dragonsworn, and Tyran soldiers who had come here, would be crushed by the Darkhounds. If they survived, Mashadar would take them. They could not fight either one. That voice in there. It wasn't just Mashadar, the mindless mist. Fane was here somewhere, too. And the dagger. Shale Ghul loomed above. High in the air, clouds churned. Surprisingly, some white thunderheads had rolled in from the south, colliding with the black as they spun together. Actually, those two together looked an awful lot like the... The Toe-Rockin turned and winged about, then swooped down lower, maybe only 100 feet off the ground.
"Be careful!"
Matt hollered, holding onto his hat.
"Are you bloody trying to kill us?"
"Apologies, my prince," the woman yelled back. "I just need to find a safe place to put you down."
"A safe place?"
Matt said.
"Good luck on that."
"It's going to be difficult. Dana is strong, but I..."
A black-fletched arrow grazed the side of Sulan's head, loosed from somewhere down below, along with a flight of a dozen others that zipped around Matt, one hitting the wing of the Toe-Rockin. Matt cursed, dropping his hat and reaching for Sulan as Alvar cried out in shock. Sulan went limp, dropping the reins. Below, a group of red-veiled Aiel prepared another volley. Matt undid his straps. He leaped, well, more crawled, over Ulver and the unconscious woman and grabbed the reins of the panicked Tow-Rocken. This could not be too much harder than riding a horse, could it? He pulled as he had seen Sulan do, turning the Tow-Rocken as arrows cut the air behind them, several taking the beast in the wings. They veered straight toward the rock wall, and Matt found himself on his feet, standing on the saddle and gripping the reins tightly as he tried to keep the wounded beast from bloody killing them all. That turn nearly tossed him free, but he held himself in place with feet wedged and holding the reins even tighter. The rush of air as they turned caught up Ulver's next words. The creature's badly wounded wings beat wildly, and it screeched wretchedly. Matt was not certain either of them were in control, as the beast twisted toward the ground. They hit the floor of the valley in a heap. Bones cracked. Like Matt hoped, they belonged to the Tow-Rocken, and he found himself tumbling end over end across the broken ground. He finally came to a rest, flopping over. He breathed in and out, stunned by it all. "That," he finally groaned, "is the bloody worst idea I've ever had." He hesitated. "Maybe the second worst." He had decided to kidnap Tuon, after all. He stumbled to his feet, and his legs still seemed to work. He did not limp too badly as he ran to the twitching Tow-Rocken.
"Ulver? Ulver!"
He found the boy still tied in the saddle, blinking and shaking his head to clear it.
"Matt," Ulver said, "next time I think you should let me fly it. I don't think you did a very good job."
"If there is a next time," Matt said, "I'll eat a whole bag of Tarvalan gold."
He yanked free the ties holding his Ashandarai and Ulver's horn, then handed the instrument to the boy. He reached for the pack with Rand's banner, which he'd carried tied at his waist, but it was gone. Panicked, Matt looked about.
"The banner! I dropped the bloody banner!"
Ulver smiled, looking up at the sign made by the swirling clouds.
"It will be fine. We're beneath his banner already," he said,
then lifted the horn and blew a beautiful note.